Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am your host, Reggie Darden, and today I'm going to go ahead and turn on the Ask Kiss Rodeo siren because I'm always excited to for all my guests, but I've been really excited for this one. One of my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu professors, Professor Philip Bullock, and I'm excited for a number of reasons to have him on. Just because one, he's an awesome guy and tells great stories. Got a lot of enthusiasm, which I love. But when I started training jiu-jitsu here, I kind of buried the lead in that I did not know that he started out in Kenpo. And not only that, I had no idea that he was a black belt in Kenpo. And on top of that, he trained with the great Paul Mills. So I was quite stunned and surprised to have all of this information thrust upon me. But I'm excited to have him on and strong arm him to not talk about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at least for a few minutes. I want to get into his Kenpo journey, and then of course want him to tell the fabulous story about how he got into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because I love that story and I can't tell it as well as he does, but we'll get into that in a bit. But we'll take it back to the beginning. How did Kenpo find you? How did the martial arts find you? Where did it start?
All right.
And then we'll go from there.
So it started back in 1997. I was working at a grocery store called Winn-Dixie, and they no longer exist. I think maybe one's in Florida, but it was a huge grocery store in the South. And anyway, I was working there, and I was stocking shelves overnight, and I was just bored out of my mind, literally bored out of my mind. And I told myself that I needed to do something, and I was either going to go join the military or I was going to join a martial arts school. So that day I went over to the Army recruiting office that was across the street from my apartments, and I asked the recruiter, and he was like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I'd like to do reserve, you know, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks out of the year. That's perfect for me. It gives me a hobby. Let's do that. And so he's, you know, all right. And so, you know, we go downtown on another day, and we take this this test, this ASVAB test to get in. Yeah. Let me tell you something, Reggie. In the history of me taking tests, I am horrible at test taking. Horrible. I've taken tests to be a police officer before. I'm horrible at written tests. For some reason that day, I don't know what happened, man, but I didn't ace this thing, but it was enough where this dude was pushing me to go full time, wanted 4 years, and was talking you could go career and all this, and I didn't want to do it. I just wanted to do reserve. You know, I'm 17 years old, you know, and he's pushing, you know, let's go. And I remember I was turned 18 in just a few months. It was under 6 months, and he was just pushing me, and I was like, you know, no, I don't want to do that. And so I decided, all right, let me go check out some martial arts schools. So I got off work another day, and I started going around to all the schools in the DFW area. And I went to 7 different schools. I checked out Taekwondo. I checked out a regular karate school. I checked out a Tengsu Do school. I checked out a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school. I just checked out all these different schools, and they just all... they were cool. I mean, there were some I like. I loved the Tengsu Do school. That was an amazing academy. That was one of my top choices. But the last stop I went to was this little hole-in-the-wall Kenpo school in North Richland Hills. And me and my buddy, he went to like 2 or 3 of the schools when he was with me that day. His name's Pete Vermillion, one of my best friends. We walk in there, and nobody's up at the front. It's an empty academy. And this big fat guy walks out of the back with a red mullet. And he's like, hey, can I help you, gentlemen? And I'm 17, you know, and I'm like, yeah, is the instructor here? He goes, I'm the instructor. And I was like, really? Like, who the heck is this guy? And so anyway, I had checked out so many schools. I was just, you know, all the instructors said they're the best because of this. And I really, being a typical teenager, wasn't trying to listen to this guy spill. So he was trying to say, oh, you know, Kempo was designed, you know, for a lethal street martial art and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, whatever, whatever. And, I was basically discrediting everything he was saying. Not discrediting, but it was just like I didn't believe him. And finally he goes, no, if somebody throws a strike, you know, we can stop them in their tracks. You know, I can follow up with different strikes. It's one of the fastest martial arts. And he goes, why don't you throw a punch at me? And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, throw a punch at me. I'll show you. And I looked at my buddy and goes, hit him. I was like, all right. So I threw a punch and man, not only did I hear this, I felt this like I was getting shot by a machine gun. And the next thing you know, I hit the floor and I'm looking up and this guy is in his Kempo stance and his eyes are wide open. And he's just staring at me and I'm like, all right. Yeah, this is awesome. I'll sign up for sure. And so I left that day. I went and got my money out of the Wells Fargo bank, and I signed up at 17 years old, and I got started training, man. And that was my first Kempo experience. And so I was under Keith Gorham at the time. He was in Northwestern Hills, and he was in the AKKI, the American Kempo Karate International, and that is Paul Mills Association. And that's where I started, man, in 1997. And I got to work. And, you know, I went through all my colored belt tests. We did well. And then I tested for my black belt in Las Vegas in 2000 in front of Paul Mills and the entire board. And that's when I got my black belt. And so it was pretty cool. And, it didn't stop there. I kept training. So
nice. Now, did you do any other while you were doing Kempo?
Not while I was doing Kempo. No. Don't get me wrong. I played around with stuff, you know, like you do. You watch a movie and you're like, oh, you know, let me try this judo throw. And we played around with stuff, but I didn't actually go to another academy and train. I learned nunchucks on my own by watching, the videos and books back then, you know, because we didn't have the internet. I mean, we did, but it wasn't like it is today. We didn't have cell phones with cameras and all that. So I had the Bruce Lee Jeet Kune Do book, and I was always studying, man. You know, just like you, I'm a nerd of the martial arts. So I taught myself nunchucks, not proficient at all, but to where I can spin them on my hand and behind my back. And then, of course, in Kempo, we learned knives and sticks, which was amazing. And no, I didn't train any other martial art up until 2002. But but before that, it was strict Kempo, man. I mean, I was a Kempo nerd. I was that guy, dude. That guy. I have a Kempo tattoo on my arm right here.
That's the
universal.
Learning things? I didn't even realize that.
That's the AKKI universal symbol from Paul Mills. And it distinctly resembles Ed Parker's universal patch that he had, just a little bit more entwined. I'll never cover that up, man. You know, that means a lot to me. I got that in 1998. And, rest in peace, Paul Mills, man. What an amazing Kempoist, dude. He's in my eyes, after Ed Parker passed away, still to this day, one of the best Kempoists ever to walk the face of the earth. I don't think there will ever be another Paul Mills, ever, ever, ever. He could make yellow belts move faster than second and third degree black belts, man. It is insane. Absolutely insane, dude. The guy was like a Kempo god, man. And nice. And I was lucky enough to be in his association and learn from him. And it was a great ride, dude.
Gotcha. Now, when did you start? When did you get to kind of train with him officially?
That's a good question, man. And I pardon my memory. This is 25, 27 years ago that all this stuff happened. Mr. Gorham broke away from the AKKI and, he gave us this spiel like, oh, you know, I need to just part ways and blah, blah, blah. And, and he really didn't give us a really good answer of why he left. But I was loyal to my instructor and he said, nothing's going to change, because I love the AKKI. I love the speed and there's nobody else to teach it around here. So if we're going to continue in that direction, we're just not going to be associated with it, fine. So I stuck with Mr. Gorham, but man, he started changing stuff up. And he started to get where he asked me to slow down my techniques in a technique line. And I just couldn't get behind that. So my friend and good friend, Mr. John Connolly, who was a fifth or a sixth degree black belt in the AKKI at that time, lived in Hearst. Now, he didn't have a school because he was a pilot for American Airlines, but he taught out of his garage. So I just called him up and said, hey, man, I'm not down with what he's teaching, man. And I called Mr. Mills, and he was like, yeah, I get with John. And so we got together. And then so when John was always flying, so me and another group of friends that we would all black belt, we would just fly out and see Mills twice a year, either in Evanston or Vegas, where he held his camps. And we just do his international camps and get to train with him, man, which was, like I said, an amazing. If you have never been hit to this day, and I've done Muay Thai, I've sparred, I've done MMA training, I have never been hit harder in my life than from Master Paul Mills. Absolutely insane, dude. This guy will wreck you, dude. Just awesome.
Yeah, no. Out of the who's who in Kenpo, yeah, Paul Mills is his name is right up there with all the greats. So.
Well, good. That's good to hear. I've been out of the Kenpo realm for a long time, so it's good to hear that, man. Because you know, he passed away a couple years ago, and it's I tried to go to his funeral, but they had a huge blizzard snowstorm that snowed everybody in, and I knew I wasn't going to make it back on time, so I didn't get to go. But man, I still rep my AKKI Letterman jacket. I mean, you know, I mean, Paul Mills is an amazing martial artist, and I was very lucky to be able to learn from him, very lucky to be involved in his association, very lucky to be on his board of black belts when he did his test. That was very cool. He invited me and a couple other the Texas guys to sit up on the board, and it was just an amazing experience, man. It really, really was. So I'll always be thankful for that.
Excellent. So we're probably gonna jump around because I want to make sure that, well, we're gonna jump to the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu side because I love the story and I want to make sure that we get it on record. So
let's fast forward to Goran broke away in like 2002 or something. I went under Mills and then I opened up my Kenpo school, an AKKI certified Kenpo school in Hearst in 2004. And so I ran that academy for 2 years. And then unfortunately, my father passed away in August 1st of 2006. Did not take that very well. August 21st or 22nd of 2006, one of my black belts, a good buddy of mine and a black belt that was teaching at my academy, said, hey, let's go try out Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I said, I don't want nothing to do with that art. And he's like, why not? I was like, that's a bunch of sweaty men rolling around hugging each other. That's not for me, dude, at all. And he goes, no, come on, man. You know, you always have an open mind, man. You know, we need to try it, dude. And I was like, no, I'm not going. It's stupid. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is the dumbest thing ever. Oh, hey, here's a street fight. Come here, let me lay down. Come on, come here to my guard. I was like, that's dumb. And so anyway, he finally convinced me to go. And I said, all right, but I'm wearing my Kenpo black belt. And he goes, no, please don't do that. I go, why not? I earned it. And he goes, don't. And I was a third degree black belt at the time. And that's crazy because that's how my ego was. I was 26 years old, third degree black belt in Kenpo. And I literally thought I could whoop anybody's butt. Anybody. Like, I literally thought I was a bad guy walking down the street. Like, I could handle anybody. So it's time to go to class. I show up there. I did not bring my Kenpo black belt, thank goodness. I get a loner gi and I get a white belt and we get on the mat. And I'm partnered up. At that time, I'm 26 years old. I'm about 190 pounds. Pretty solid. You know, I work out all the time. I'm fast in Kenpo, so I'm a solid guy. And I get partnered up with this tiny little 150 pound guy. And it's funny because we called him Squints because without his glasses, he couldn't see anything. He's all squinting around. And so anyway, that night, I'll never forget it. We learned a scissor sweep from closed guard, and we learned an arm bar from mount. So scissor sweep to mount, and then from mount, the arm bar. And I was like, all right, you know, this is cool. And I felt it. I was like, but in a fight, you know, I'll break out of this and punch this dude. And, you know, I'm just not really opening my mind to it like I should. So it was 45 minutes of training. You know, we do the training, we learn the moves, and then it goes to, this is live training. And I'm like, what's live training? It's like sparring. I was like, oh, yeah? And he goes, yeah. And I go, all right, this is what's up. And he goes, all right. So he's like, basically, what do we do? And he goes, well, we wrestle and try to submit each other, like in an arm lock or, you know, anything that you can get a choke. And I was like, oh, wait. Because, you know, I knew about chokes. And I know how to rear naked choke somebody. We have chokes in Kenpo. So I was like, all right, bet. So we shook hands, and he was 150 pounds. So I was like, I'm not gonna go too hard on the guy, you know? So we shake hands. This dude slams me to the floor, crawls around past my guard, jumps on my back, and puts me in a rear naked choke. And Reggie, I'm telling you right now, bro, I did not want to tap, but I had to because I was going to go unconscious. So I tapped, and he let go, and I was like, all right, dude, you are not doing that again, bro. Not even a little. I mean, I let him. I was like, you little 150-pound guy. No way. So we shake hands. This dude did it again and again and again and again, the same thing every time, and I could do nothing to stop it. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, well, you're lucky we're not in the street, dude. I'd punch you in the throat and gouge your eyes out. I'm really thinking this in my mind, that I'm going to do this to this guy, dude. And it just, man, that night really, really hit home for me. And it made me question a lot of stuff. That night, I left jiu-jitsu. I gave the loaner gi back, and he was like, hey, you want to sign up? And I was like, oh, you know, I own a Kempo school, so I don't know if I have time for jiu-jitsu. You know, I'll think about it. And I went in my car that night, and I'll never forget it. I turned the car on, turned the radio off, and I sat in that parking lot for 45 minutes just contemplating life. What had just happened? I was just rewinding. Why couldn't I stop this guy? I couldn't even get him off me. I couldn't even block him from getting around me. Nothing that I had learned the last 9.5 years with everything that I had worked on in martial arts worked. And but the whole thing was, is when I asked him, I go, hey man, how long you been training? He's like, oh, 3 months. 3 months, Reggie, 9.5 years. I'm a third degree black belt. And I can't even stop this guy from climbing up my back and choking me unconscious, man. Absolutely insane. And it blew my mind. And I didn't know what to do. And it's crazy. And so the next day I went to the jiu-jitsu school and I signed up. And 19 years later, I'm still doing jiu-jitsu, man. And I love it. And I didn't stop Kempo. I still did both for a long time. Now, I did walk away from my Kempo school to do jiu-jitsu. And I handed that off to somebody else. But I still taught Kempo for a long time. In fact, I taught Kempo so much that I created, with jiu-jitsu and the other martial arts I've learned, I created a reality combat training system. Just a little like combat martial art, you know. Mm-hmm. Wasn't trying to start anything, get it global, just for people who wanted to learn self-defense without the foof, you know. Yeah. I didn't need to put all this extra stuff, these added steps, and that most of these martial arts have to get belts, you know. It was just come in, you're going to learn reality combat, and that's it. There's no belts, there's nothing like that, you know. You're going to come in and do that. So that was fun. But you know where my heart is, man. It's on the jiu-jitsu mats, dude.
Oh, yeah. No, that's why I wanted to make sure we covered you know, the jiu-jitsu side.
I still do my time. Like, I still, like, I'll go on a heavy bag. I can still do time drills. I'm still quick, man. I'm still fast. I can still strike fast, you know, from a Kempo's perspective. So, yeah, dude, I love Kempo. I've got nothing bad to say about it.
Gotcha. Now, so jumping back, so for the listeners, you're you know, one of the, I guess, the second in command here at Henzo Gracie DFW. Yeah. And you're rocking it with the 6 a.m. jiu-jitsu, running the 6 a.m. classes, and one of the best kids coaches.
Well, thank you, brother.
Out there. But jumping back to the Kempo side, I should say, when did you get into the teaching side of the Kempo?
Oh, man. I was teaching before black belt. I think I started teaching at my green belt. I think right at green belt, Mr. Gorham started letting me take the beginner's class, which was white belts. And you know, that's easy. You know, it's punches, it's kicks, it's delayed sword, alternating maces. You know,
exactly.
It's the 10 core techniques. And bro, I got those ace down, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I loved it. And so he let me start teaching at green. He let me take more classes when I was, because it went backwards in my association. It was third degree brown first, second degree brown, first degree brown, then you went to black.
Yeah.
He started letting me get more classes at brown. And then by black belt, literally, I was running all the show except for the advanced class. He was teaching all the black belts, and I would teach. Man, I love teaching martial arts. That is like, It's the most rewarding thing on the planet, man, to take somebody who knows nothing and to mold them and to show them that they build confidence. And it's just such an amazing thing, whether it's kid or adult, man. And I hope to be doing this till I die, man. I hope that I die on the mats teaching a class one day. I just have a heart attack. Don't cry. Say, hey, he loved what he was doing. And yeah, man, and bury me in the ground. But I love it. I love teaching martial arts. So yeah, I taught Kempo starting at green belt. And then I didn't stop teaching Kempo till, Man, I taught all the way up till 2013, 2012, 2013. I was still teaching. I still had people come over. Hey, can I get a private lesson with you? Or, hey, I got a test coming up. Can I review with you? Yeah. I really didn't leave the world, but I'm really far removed now. I mean, it's been now 15 years since I've even taught, watched somebody or even done anything Kempa related.
Yeah,
so
gotcha,
I'm very
gotcha,
far
gotcha,
removed
gotcha,
now. Gotcha. But don't get me wrong, I can still hit them timing drills, baby.
Yeah, no, got to keep those skills skills fresh there. So then jumping back to the jiu-jitsu side, when did you start getting into teaching jiu-jitsu?
I started teaching at Blue Belt, and it was assisting in the kids class. So it was 2010. I was at a Gracie Baja in Houston. My mom had just passed away the year before, so I'd moved down to Houston to take care of her. She had passed away, and there was no jiu-jitsu gyms near me, so I took like a 3-month hiatus from jiu-jitsu. And finally, I remember I got in my car to go to work one day, and it said, "Coming soon, Gracie Baja." And I was like, "Bet, I'm signing up, man." I didn't care. People have their thoughts about Gracie Baja, but I didn't care. I just needed to train jiu-jitsu. So I signed up, and it was great. And one of the professors there at Blue Belt, when I would come in the evenings, he would help me assist with the kids class. And that's when I really started teaching kids, because before that, I didn't even teach kids in Kempo. I only taught adults. Because, you know, Kempo is very hardcore.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to be able to elbow some kid in the sternum and knock him to the ground and show him that this works. You know,
exactly.
That's not how it works. So, yeah, so 2010, I started teaching kids at around Blue Belt, helping with the kids class. And it never left me from there. I love teaching the kids, man. That is where it is, because that's the next generation. You know, we have to mold them to take our place. And especially with kids today. Reggie, all kids need martial arts, man.
Oh, yeah,
all
sure.
Kids need, before soccer, before football, before ballet, before piano, all kids need martial arts to learn what it is, to be humbled, to learn respect and discipline, humility, what it's like to be in tough situations. I have kids that cry on these mats every day, but it makes them stronger, man. And they don't cry because the class hard, it's cry because they don't win or they don't think they're always trying to do their best. And jiu-jitsu's hard, I tell them. It's tough, man. This is the only martial art that the kid cannot get a black belt in. Think about that.
Oh, yeah. So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's, you know, a lot of schools out there are, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and stuff lately, and hearing people talk about this black belt contract that you know, when you're signing up for the class, oh, okay, in 2 years, you're going to have your black belt on this date. We are going to give, like, that blows my mind. I can't even fathom knowing a specific date on my first day of when I'm going to get my black belt. That makes no sense at all.
It's a marketing scheme. Yeah, exactly what it is. It's a marketing scheme. And unfortunately, you know, karate, not Kempo in particular, but just all karate, it's very hard to find the hardcore schools. You know, karate now has gone away from, I mean, let's be honest, back in the 90s and the early 2000s, Kempo was hardcore, man. I mean, bro, I got the crap beat out of me to get my black belt, dude. It wasn't this pity patty stuff. I mean, I was getting ribs broken. We were breaking shins, kicking each other. I mean, bro, we damaged our bodies, man. We got nasty, dude.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was punching the, what are they called? The
Makiwara.
Yes, the Makiwara boards. I was punching those, trying to toughen my knuckles up, man. We got down, dude. And now you walk in, you know, in some of these schools, it's pity pat playtime, dude, you know? And I'm like, what is going on, man?
I brought up a few times at the school where it's sparring class night, and all of a sudden everybody has things to do.
Yep.
Interesting. Like you're there every other day training, you fine with working your forms and everything else, but make sure you bring your sparring gear on Thursday. You know what? You know, my mother-in-law's coming into town and I got a roast in the oven. And
yep.
It's like.
But here's the thing, sparring really will show you where you're at in technique and skill.
Oh, for sure.
Because let's be honest, and I hope I don't piss anybody off because, I love all martial arts, but in theory, in a fight, unless you know how to get the timing down from punches and the guy moving around, nobody's going to throw a punch and stand there with their arm out and give you enough time to to knock out a 10-hit technique, you know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. Graft on to five swords. But if you can, in sparring, if you can get those timings down where you hit the jab and then and get to the face, yeah, now you can follow up with strikes. Mm-hmm. Now the dude's not going to be there, and you're going to have to move and get in sequence with what's happening in the fight, but it's there. Don't tell me it can't be done. I used to do it all the time. I'd get in on a block. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I'd hit Sword of Destruction in a live sparring. Mm-hmm. Live sparring. And here's the thing. In a real fight, when you hit that nut check, there will be no hand strike to the neck. I promise you, bro. It's not there. Trust me. They are balled up on the floor in the fetal position. That's just how it is, you know? So, but sparring will make it to where you get, because I guarantee you, these karate guys and these kempo guys that don't do live sparring, that don't incorporate that in their training, they get in a fight, they're not knocking out a technique. You could give them 100 techniques, yellow to black, they're not knocking one out. Because exactly. They've never gotten in the real scenario of timing and technique and another human being trying to move and hit them at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah, you fall to your lowest level.
And that's right.
If you haven't been training, you know, quote unquote, real situations,
yep.
That adrenaline, that muscle memory,
that's right.
That confidence.
Yep. That's why I love what Jeff Speakman's doing with the Combat Kempo and the Kempo 5.0. I mean, bro, that's brilliant. I mean, let's be honest. You know what I'm saying? If you have all these Kempoists that say, oh, well, we need to preserve Ed Parker's art. Listen, even Ed Parker was changing stuff. If you go back and read Infinite Insights, volume 1-5, the whole blueprint's there. You should evolve. You should be changing stuff up. Times change. You know, if we go back to this, let's preserve the art. Well, then it died with Ed Parker years ago in 1990. You know, let's preserve the art. We're not going to do any more for Mills. Well, then it died with Mills. The AKKI died with, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm,
exactly.
No, we need to preserve this. We need to keep going. We need to add anew. That's what I love about jiu-jitsu. It never ends. I learned a new move from Mike, the brown belt, this week. I've been training 9 years longer than he has. He showed me something brand new. And guess what? I used it every single round yesterday and today, and it worked beautifully. And that's what I love, is that people should have an open mind and be learning from others and stuff.
Yeah, I always find it funny that one of the big things Ed Parker was known for was evolving the art, changing the art. But yet we have that joke, you know, how many Kempoists does it take to change a light bulb?
Yep.
One to change the light bulb and 99 to say, oh, that's not the way Ed Parker would do it. And it's fun. It's crazy to me that there are so many quote unquote traditionalists when Ed Parker was known for not being traditional.
Exactly.
And, you know, he doesn't want it to be stagnant, and there's always that changing, and there's so many. I guess I won't just limit it to Kempo, but there are so many people that are so unwilling to move away from what's in the book, what's in the big red book.
Oh, agreed. Well,
that's,
agreed.
You know, we do delayed sword, and oh, well, if you don't do delayed sword this way, then you're doing it wrong. And it's like, so my instructor, Mr. Piper, we've done this exercise a number of times where how many techniques can you, we're just going to take delayed sword, and how many different things can, how many techniques and stuff can you build off of delayed sword?
Yeah.
And, you know, we're
the
sitting
numbers
around,
are infinite.
You know, yeah, exactly.
It is.
Exactly.
It's infinite.
We would be like, oh, well, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7. It's like, no, you could.
Infinite.
You could go all day long, all week long, just using delayed sword.
Just the three moves of delayed sword. You can alternate those to make 18 different techniques. And we haven't even talked about grafting yet.
Exactly.
So it's infinite. And that's what I love about Kempo. But you're right. These guys don't, they don't open their mind, and they want to stay traditional. And it, man, it hurts them, dude. It sucks, man. You know, I've seen a lot of grandmasters, man, fizzle out, and their associations die because they're not willing to accept new things. And, you know,
gotta involve.
You have to
evolve. No one art has everything.
That's very true. That's very, very true. I'm glad you said that, Reggie, because it's true, man. You got to train a lot of stuff, man. You know, it's all in a bag. You know, I tell everybody all the time, they're like, what's the best martial art in the world? Well, that depends on who you ask. You know, there are people that have done Kenpo and Kenpo has saved their butts in several fights. There are people that have had jiu-jitsu save their butts in street fights. But I mean, any given day, I can take a wrestler and have him smoke a fifth degree black belt in Kyokushin, just putting him on his butt on a concrete. And in that same day, I can have a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy choke out a wrestler. And it just, the best thing is to train all things, like Bruce Lee said, take what's best, what works for you, and discard the rest. If it doesn't work, that's fine. And that's what, like I said, that's what I love about jiu-jitsu. Like, my professor, Greg, is very different than me. I don't have his jiu-jitsu. Do I learn from him? Yes. Do I have his techniques? Yes. But his jiu-jitsu game and my game are very, very different. He's 6'4 and 210 pounds. I'm 6' and 155 pounds. Very, very different body styles, very different journeys, very different jiu-jitsu. And that's how it should be. If one instructor says, no, you have to do it like me all the time, well, then, like we said, the art dies with them, man. And who wants to have that?
Gotcha. So the other day I was part of a conversation to where we were talking about what it means to be a black belt. And so it was, you know, there's a certain person that will remain nameless, but got their rank rather quickly. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of debate about that. But because in any art, there isn't really a standard of what it means to be a black belt, what it means to earn a black belt, you know, what how long it should take, and all these things. So it got me thinking that I wanted to start asking this of all the guests is to you, what does it mean to be a black belt? What does it mean to earn a black belt? And, you know, whether it be Kenpo or jiu-jitsu or whatever.
That's a very good question, a very wide question, because like you said, it varies on different levels. To me, I would say somebody that can show the skills of being a black belt, and obviously that ranges for different people. I don't expect a 21-year-old black belt. I don't expect somebody at 80 years old testing for their black belt to be able to do what a 21-year-old does. You know what I'm saying? But to have the knowledge, to have the skill to produce that they've learned the knowledge in that time. And then the way they carry themselves, man. I've always said this, man, you have to be a black belt on the mats and you have to be a black belt off the mats. I have known so many black belts that are just straight up D-bags, man. Pieces of crap, trash, never do the right thing, you know, egotistical driven. So, you know, just because you have a black belt doesn't make you a good person. And it just depends. But to me, the black belt needs to have honor, needs to have discipline, needs to have respect, needs to be humble. And like I said, be able to show a skill. You know, when somebody comes in here, especially in jiu-jitsu, it's much harder in jiu-jitsu because let's say you go to a karate school, a Kenpo school, something like that. The instructor has nothing to prove. They got their black belt. Their fighting days are over. In jiu-jitsu, that black belt is expected to mop the floor with everybody in the room. And I don't know why that is, man. It blows my mind. I tell people all the time, I go, do you realize jiu-jitsu is the only art on the planet where they expect the coaches to do just as much as the players? Nowhere else in that does exist. You'll never see Bill Belichick line up, you know what I'm saying, with the offensive line. He'd get smashed. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? You'll never see Pat Riley out there, you know, shooting three free throws. It doesn't happen. But in jiu-jitsu, they expect me and Greg to hammer everybody in this gym. And that, the reality of it, that just doesn't happen all the time. You know, I'm a small guy. It's jiu-jitsu. I get caught. There are big guys, and there's good guys here, you know. And Greg smashes me all the time. But that's what I love about jiu-jitsu. It keeps you humble. It's crazy, man. It's crazy how it varies between art and art, man. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, I just think, like I said, being humble, having the skill to demonstrate, making sure that you have discipline and respect, and that you can show those skills on and off the mat.
Right on. Yeah, that's it. It's always funny to me how, well, kind of like you said, it's, yeah, the black belts are expected to be able to totally smoke everybody, and just kind of with everything, we can have our off days or whatever, and but we still need to push ourselves and I think where I'm trying to get to is I know we've kind of talked about this before, but not being afraid to ask the black belt, like, hey, like let's roll.
Yes,
like,
yes. There's people in DFW that still carry this tradition. It's so dumb. There's old school jiu-jitsu guys, apparently, I never had this with anybody, but apparently it's like disrespectful to ask a black belt to roll. That's the dumbest thing ever. If you want to roll with me, come ask me to roll. If I don't want to roll with you, or I'm tired, or I'm injured or something, or I will tell you no, very politely. I'll be like, hey, not today, I'll get you on the next round. No big deal. But don't be scared to ask me. That's just dumb, dude. Yeah, I'll roll with anybody, anytime, anywhere. I love jiu-jitsu, man, and I love it's a human chess match to me. It always intrigues me, intellectual, because no role's ever the same, even though we do the same moves. So I encourage that, man. If you're a white belt in jiu-jitsu, or you're a white belt in any art, Kempo, Kyokushin, Muay Thai, whatever, ask your instructor all the questions you can. That's what they're there for. That's what they get paid to do. You guys got to remember, and this is what gets crazy in the martial arts, these guys get blind loyalty on their instructors, man. Mm-hmm. You pay that person a service. You pay that person a membership fee to learn. They don't dictate your life. You don't owe them anything. You wouldn't go into 24-hour fitness and be like, you know, hey man, what do you think about this relationship advice? No, don't be asking your martial arts instructor that. They have no, their expertise is in fighting and self-defense. That's it. Leave all the other stuff out. It's so crazy, but people get blind loyalty, and it's nuts.
You don't have to be, I think more people need to be not afraid of, you know, if you're out of school, you have an instructor that's not working for you, it's not helping you improve, then
leave.
Be okay to leave.
You have to.
Yeah, I saw something the other day on Reddit, and the guy was like, oh, well, the professor told me that if I give him $700, he'll give me my purple belt or something like that. Should I stay?
Nope. Like, leave.
Why would you even think to ask that? Like, no.
So get this. So I got my brown belt in 2016 after 10 years of training. And usually it takes 10 years to get your black belt. But like I said, you know, I moved. I had two parents pass away. I overcame alcoholism in my jiu-jitsu journey. So there were a lot of bumps on the way. It was a little bumpy road. But I got my brown belt in 2016. And by the end of 2017, I had 4 stripes on my brown belt. So the next is black. And no matter what martial art, Kempo, Kyokushin, Jiu-Jitsu, you never ask your instructor about rank. That's just everybody knows that. So, but I was working hard. I was working hard, and my black belt didn't come. And so I went to my instructor, and I was like, hey, obviously I'm not doing something right. What do I need to improve on to get to the next level? And he's like, oh, no, you're good. Don't worry about it. Just keep doing what you're doing. Keep running the school and teaching the classes. And he was just doing it to milk me for money. And then he finally came, and he wanted $5,000.
Oh my goodness.
To get my jiu-jitsu black belt. And I was like, nope, I'm good. And so I left him, and that's when I found Greg, and that was 6 years ago. And so it took me, after I got my brown belt, it took me another 4 years to get my black belt. And Reggie, you know me, bro. I train 6 days a week, 2 times a day. I train hardcore, dude. Nobody can tell me I don't train. I'm not a 2 day a week guy. I'm not a 3 day a week guy. This is not a hobby for me. This is what I'm passionate in. I am on the mats all the time. So my journey took me 14 years to get my black belt. And 10 of those, the last 10 of the 14 years, I was training 6 days a week. Anybody else that would start their journey in 6 days a week, they could probably get their black belt in 8-9 years, dude. Mm. And it took me another 10 after that. So, but like everybody says, everybody's journey is different. Don't compare yourself to anybody, right? Comparison is the thief of all joy. If you're sitting there and, you know, and this happens, it happens in all martial arts. You're training for a while, you got a partner that's been in the class, and you're better than them at the technique line. You're smoking them in techniques, your forms look better. And all of a sudden, the instructor comes up and gives them a promotion.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the hell? You know?
Yeah.
But you can't do that. As tough as it is, because I've been there, it sucks. But as tough as it is, you're not on their journey. You have no idea what they did, you know? That guy could have been taking 15 private lessons behind your back. You don't know. Did you ask him? You know, he's trying. He's doing his best, you know? Just because you're better skilled doesn't mean that you deserve the promotion, so.
Exactly. Well said. All right, so we're going to move into our lightning round here. Got a few little questions as we head towards wrapping up here.
All right.
It's usually kind of limited to Kenpo, but
we'll keep this open
so you can answer any way
I'll
you like.
I'll answer it in Kenpo for sure.
First question being, do you have a favorite technique?
Oh, I do. Hands down, five swords, brother.
Yes.
And that's everybody's favorite technique. But it's so great because if you think about it, the first move, when you get that outward block with the left hand and you hit that outward hand strike to the carotid artery, it opens up. I mean, have you ever been hit with that move? Really hit? It opens up the body for so much. And that's what I love about it, because I think of five swords as like the blank canvas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have the paintbrush. And it's up to you, brother. You can paint whatever picture you want to. So I know that's everybody's favorite move, and people are gonna get tired. I love five swords, brother. That is my all-time favorite technique. Second one, delayed sword, hands down, bro.
I love just
the good old basic. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, that's,
those are my favorites.
Five
dude.
Swords is one of like I like to call the Kenpo All Stars.
It's
a technique that, one, everybody loves, and then two,
yes,
I've seen it in all of the versions of Kenpo that I've been exposed to. Actually, even one of my guests that didn't train Kenpo knew five swords.
Nice.
And as we're talking,
nice.
He's like, "Oh yeah, I know five swords, and I teach it to Mike." It's like, you're not even a quote unquote Kenpoist.
Yep.
He's like, no, it's a good technique.
When it comes to weapons, I love like Eye of the Storm, Storm of Destruction. I love using those techniques when teaching stick stuff because they work beautifully. So yeah, dude, I have a lot of techniques, but five swords for sure my favorite.
Very nice. I like it. All right, next one. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
Oh man, I knew you were gonna ask me that. Golly. All right, listen, traditionalist, don't kill me. Please don't kill me. Reggie, I hate forms, bro.
Nothing wrong with that.
It's me, bro. It has nothing to do with the forms. They're beautiful. I get it. The basics, it's just, man, my brain, my ADHD brain just cannot. I don't know, man. It's just hard for me. My favorite form always was form one. And we didn't do short or long form. Paul Mills changed it. So we just had a form one and it kind of combined the two. Form one was one of my favorites. Form three was great because it had a lot of techniques in it. I like that one. Mm-hmm. And then my favorite set, bro, I would have to say empty hand finger set. If we're going weapons, knife set for sure.
There you go.
For sure.
There you go. Very nice. Yeah. No, I've said this on previous episodes, but like one of my favorite ones is a form called book set.
Okay.
And in the kind of the Ed Parker ones, it doesn't, most schools don't usually teach it. I started in a school that was kind of under the Tracy Kenpo branch.
And, nice.
So they teach that form, but, there's heat because it's like, oh, well, it's not really a Kenpo form. It's more of a Kung Fu form or whatever. But
yeah.
I was like, I learned it in a Kenpo school.
Right?
So it's
Kenpo,
a Kenpo
that's
form.
That's right.
And,
yeah.
And I like to do it. And that's fine. So
I mean, listen, dude, I learned Aikido moves in my Kenpo school. I learned Judo moves in my Kenpo school. It doesn't matter. Just like you said, it's all part of the martial art, man. You know,
yeah.
doesn't matter what school you're in. Learn the moves and get them down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in my first Kenpo school, my instructor's, one of his mentors was Professor Wally J.
Oh, nice.
And we did some sick wrist locks. I mean, that's
where I got my love
for wrist locks.
That's
and
what's up.
Finger locks.
That's what's up.
That small circle jiu-jitsu.
I feel bad. I wrist locked one of my white belts this morning. I feel horrible. He was trying to punch me in my throat, dude, and I feel bad, so I wrist locked him, man.
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do. I mean, there's no law saying that.
That's very true.
I'm actually reminded of, I guess this was a few months ago, and Professor Greg wrist locked me.
Oh yeah.
And I just remember thinking like, he does realize I have a white belt on. Like, is that a lie? Is that,
right.
Are you allowed to do that? I mean, yeah, you're a black belt, but are you allowed to do that to me?
Yeah.
But I can't wait until I can start using some wrist locks, but I got a while. But yeah, I love those. All right, the next question, do you have a favorite weapon?
Yeah, for sure. I love knives, man. I'm a knife freak. I have a huge collection of knives at home. And what's funny is I love knives. I don't carry one on me at all. But I love knives. I can work them. I teach knife. I teach people how to fight with knives. But I don't carry one. It's funny because I'm always armed. I always have a gun. I mean, even as we're talking, my gun is 5 feet away from me. I'm always armed at all times. And so, I love the knife because of how beautiful it is. But when you get into the reality of knife fighting, it's a very, very scary situation and scary world. I would much rather get shot with a gun than stabbed with a knife. Cold steel is very unforgiving, especially sharp steel. So, I would never want to get in a knife fight if somebody ever pulled a knife on me and I had to. I would draw my firearm to back them up. If not, I would do the old Kenpo, pull my belt off, get a shoe on my hand, and start to try to defend myself. But the most thing is I would run, man, because you don't ever want to get stabbed with a knife, man.
Oh, yeah.
We all know we've cut our finger cutting vegetables. That shit hurts. For days it hurts, dude.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Got the scar. I've got some scars I can show you from knife stuff. So, all right. Last question here. If there's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, and I guess I would say besides Helio Gracie, who would that be?
Elvis Presley.
Oh.
Hands down, I would want to train Kenpo with Elvis Presley. For sure, I would want to be in his technique line. I would want him to strike. I would want to be his partner and just bang it out with him for a solid hour, yo.
Oh,
hands down, dude.
You were definitely the first person that
really
ever said that.
Well,
for sure. And,
dude.
And I've talked to people that knew Elvis, and they did not say
just,
that.
So I would just want to train with him, bro. I knew he loved Kenpo, and I loved Kenpo, and I liked Elvis, and I would definitely want to. I would want to train with. I would want to feel what his power was like, his technique was like. I think we'd get down, dude.
Nice.
I think it'd be an awesome session.
Nice. I like that. All right, so we're at our final piece here. Then that is a shameless self-promotion, so you can plug whatever you like, or if there's anything that you wanted to get out there that we didn't touch on, you have the floor, and then we will close out from there.
I'm good. I don't shame people, so I'm good. You and I have had discussions off podcast about these fake martial artists, these McDojo guys, and they're idiots, man. But you know, it is. I guess my thing is to anybody listening, you know, do your due diligence. Go research a martial arts school, no matter what you're going to join. Research the instructor, do background checks on them, make sure they're not, you know, they don't play with kiddies, they're not pedophiles, make sure they're not wife abusers. Make sure that you're going to get into a good, wholesome academy and that you get around and surround yourself with good-hearted and like-minded people. That's the best advice I can give anybody.
That's very well said, very well said. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to be on and sharing your wonderful stories. Hopefully we can do this again at another point and get into more. Oh my God, there's so much stuff to get into. But since you didn't bring it up, I will bring up one. You are a co-host on the Legends and the Dragons podcast.
Yes, so, yeah.
I will make sure that links for that get into the show notes. You do that with one of the previous guests, Jimmy, and you guys are, oh my God.
Yeah, we're a little crazy. You have to. You got to make sure you can handle some wacky conversations if you're going to watch our podcast.
You guys are nuts, but it's fun time. So, make sure that folks check that out, and then also I will throw in a plug for Henzo Gracie DFW.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're in the Dallas Fort Worth area and you're looking for some jiu-jitsu or some Muay Thai, or
yes,
you just want to come hang out with awesome people.
Yes. I mean,
the people at the school, I can't say enough for not just the professors and the coaches, but just everybody comes in here with a great attitude, and we got each other's backs. Yep. And
it's all culture, brother, and it starts at the top, and that's what I love.
I love
about this academy. I love all our students. It's an amazing, amazing thing. So thank you very much.
All right. So that is all, and I can't wait for everyone to hear this. And we will talk soon.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.